Next case for argument is Oakley versus Freeland. Mr. Freeland?
May it please the court, my name is Daniel Freeland. I'm the trustee in this case. I'm also representing myself pursuant to order of court. The issue presented to your honor today is one that is very concise and one is very pointed. Whether or not cash, $2,700 in Federal Reserve notes, is tangible personal property under the exemption statute of the state of Indiana, 345510-2, paren B, paren 2, or whether it is intangible under subsection B, paren 3.
Before you even start your argument, what's your view? Do you think we ought to certify to the Indiana Supreme Court?
I'm sorry, what?
Do you think we ought to certify this case to the Indiana Supreme Court?
I would say probably would not be a bad idea. Indiana, we are deciding Indiana law in this case, though the effect of an exemption is federal law. Whether or not something is exempt is state law, and the interpretation of whether it is intangible or tangible has never been decided by the Supreme Court of the state of Indiana. Exemptions have been certified recently. In Re Zumbrun was a certified case in the determination of life insurance, though Judge Grant has just decided the entirety statute at the bankruptcy level as to whether or not that was a valid exemption or not.
Thank you.
It's the position, though, of the trustee that there's no question that cash is intangible personal property. It is a Federal Reserve note. It has value not because of itself, but because of the federal government standing behind it and being ready to say that we will defend the value of this piece of paper. In the event the federal government were not there, it would have very little value. The Deutschmark during the Reichstag period shows what can happen in great inflationary times. Tens of thousands of dollars were used, or marks were used, to buy something.
Do you think should we apply common sense in determining what the Indiana legislature intended? For instance, does it really make sense
your rash assumption
to exempt only $100 in cash rather than $4,000 in light of the purpose of the exemption provision? And wouldn't that encourage debtors, you know, to merely convert cash into personal property?
It may, but look at the opposite view. If $1,000 is in the bank, it's clearly intangible because it's a debt that the bank owes to the debtor. Whereas if they pull the money out of the bank and hold it in their hand, now they've got $1,000 that they can claim as exempt. I don't think that was the intent of the legislature. The intent of the legislature was to allow $4,000 in tangible personal property, cars, furniture, and non-residential real estate. So this $4,000 subsumes two areas, not only tangible personal property, but non-residential real estate also. I think it's clear that intangible cash, bonds, stocks, were included in the $100.
See, you acknowledge in your brief that some sources treat money as distinct from both tangible and intangible property. And
I don't think so. I think I acknowledge that money is distinct from general intangibles as a defined term on the Uniform Commercial Code. I don't think that money is distinct from either being tangible or intangible. A dollar bill is intangible. But if I have that dollar bill signed by the Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, it suddenly becomes tangible. A promissory note is intangible. But if it's a promissory note that George Washington gave back in the 1790s, it's tangible. Not because of the paper, but because of what is there. It's something to make it worth something different than just an intangible.
So is there any ambiguity here?
I don't think so.
Okay.
In my position, there's no ambiguity. By definition, cash, a Federal Reserve note, you might be able to make an argument if it was a silver certificate, that there was actually silver back there to defend it. But we don't have silver certificates anymore. We have notes. And there's no argument that a note under Indiana law is an intangible. It is specie. It has no specific value in and of itself other than what the government says it has, and that makes it, by definition, black definition is used chiefly in the law of taxation. This term means such property as has no intrinsic or market value, but is merely representative or evidence of value. That's all a Federal Reserve note is. It's evidence of value. I don't think that the money has been treated any differently, cash, any differently by the state of Indiana in any other respect, but I really don't think we actually have to go into that. I think it's being made much more tortious than it is. It's a relatively simple, easy question based upon what cash is. I reserve the rest of
my
time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Freeland. Ms. Gately?
May it please the Court. We believe there is an ambiguity in the statute. The statute clearly does not define whether cash is tangible.
Then why shouldn't we assume that the Indiana legislature intended to give intangible and tangible property the same meanings they had in numerous other Indiana statutes?
Because the statutes aren't consistent. There are some statutes that treat it as intangible, specifically defining it intangible. There are some statutes that lump it with some intangibles. Some statutes put it in categories with other tangible things.
Well, I mean, I agree with you that there are, that other Indiana statutes may have had other purposes than the exemption one that's been presented here. Is there any indication that the Indiana legislature thought that the terms tangible and intangible had a different meaning in different contexts, or that it was using an aberrant definition of intangible property in one context or the other?
I don't believe that the Indiana legislature meant for there to be aberrant definitions, but I think that the argument that cash is absolutely intangible isn't accurate. I think if I were to lose $100 bill, I would have lost $100. If I lose my checkbook, I haven't lost the money that's sitting in the bank. I could get a new checkbook and get that money back out. So cash is tangible. To lose cash...
Well, unless a criminal got hold of
your
checkbook. I mean...
Right, but the tangible note of cash...
Let me ask you this. Why do you think the legislature allows a $4,000 exemption for tangible property and only $100 for intangible?
I believe they allowed the $4,000 for tangible because that included other things besides cash in your wallet.
Precisely.
Included your automobile, your furniture.
I don't want you to have to strip the clothes off your back and so on. But so that's why they don't mind taking the money out of your bank, but they don't want to strip the clothes off your back and make you substitute a bicycle for a car or something like that. But that analysis, that distinction, puts money in the intangible side, right? Because money isn't something you clothe your nakedness with.
No, but if you look at the basic principles of the statute to allow the debtor what's necessary to sustain he and his family after the bankruptcy or after a judgment is...
No, but if he puts the money in the bank, it's stripped away. If he puts it into cash, so what's the purpose of giving people an incentive to to empty their bank account and walk around with $4,000 in cash.
I don't believe there's an incentive. The incentive
is what is the incentive? Suppose you had no tangible property. So what you'd do if you were a rational person, you would immediately, and you had $4,000 in the bank, you'd immediately take it out in cash. And that way you would shield it. So what sense does that make?
Well, I think that in that instance, someone obviously they would have clothes. They would, if they were to have declared $4,000 in cash alone, that means anything else they had, their toothbrush, the shirt on their back,
right,
those could all be seized.
Right. And if they have $4,000, they can buy another toothbrush. So it might be quite sensible for them to do it that way.
But on the other hand, we believe that they intended for them to be able to keep more than $100 so that they could go to the grocery store, so that they could put cash in their car to drive to work, so that they could pay their rent or their utilities.
They don't have cash, but they have $100 in the bank, or they have $200 in the bank. Then they're stripped down to $100. I mean, $100 is $100, whether it's in the bank or... So I don't really understand. Right? Because if they had $200 in the bank and no cash, then that gets cut down to $100, right?
It would under the statute. But practically speaking, I would imagine if someone were coming to a bankruptcy in an emergency situation, their attorney may well tell them to do that, to liquidate down to the $100. Or if it's not,
that of course is the incentive that your position creates. It doesn't. And this is a more basic point, that we really think of money and bank accounts and stock certificates and bonds and all that. They're fungible. You know, currency is just, and of course it's disappearing as people use credit cards, but it's just another, as Mr. Freeland says, it's just an index of value. It doesn't have any use value. It's not utilitarian. It's just something you use to get objects. Buy things of value. It's in itself just a symbol, just symbolic. And we'll probably come to a point where we don't have physical money anymore. It's all electronic.
Do you think we ought to certify?
The question of certifying, I suppose ultimately the Indiana Supreme Court should decide how the statute should be interpreted. But I do know that the Indiana Supreme Court in the Pomeroy case did say that these statutes are to be liberally construed for the benefit of the debtor. So although it hasn't specifically ruled whether cash is tangible or intangible, it has said that these types of statutes should be liberally construed, and this court has even said in In re Fogel that these types of statutes...
I don't see where literalism gives you, because the stock certificate is tangible. Right? But you have a stock certificate, 100 shares worth a lot of money. Now, because the certificate is tangible, does that mean that it's in the $4,000 exemption also?
No, because if I were to go to the grocery store to buy milk for my child, I would not be able to turn over that stock certificate to pay for it. Whereas if I had cash,
now you've lost me completely. Because now what you're saying is the money is the real index of value, not the stock certificate, because with the money you can tell a person, you know, give me some good, but with the stock certificate you can. So now I'm lost.
I don't believe that cash fits neatly into the tangible, intangible characteristic.
Well, then if it doesn't fit, then literalism isn't going to get you anywhere.
And that's why I believe if we were...
But if we use common sense, then you lose, right?
I don't think so. I think common sense, looking back at what the Indiana Supreme Court said, is that it's intended to allow a debtor to keep sufficient, a reasonable amount, so that they can sustain life after their bankruptcy in this instance. A reasonable amount so that
not
their family...
A reasonable amount of money, because, as I say, if you don't carry a lot of cash and you just have it in the bank, it's taken away and you're down to your $100.
It's a reasonable amount of assets, and it's in the way the statute, if the court was to say that cash is intangible, it's not only the cash in their pocket, but their bank account. They would be limited to $100 total of those two things, which makes it impractical the next time their rent bill comes
due. It said $4,000 in assets, but it didn't. It thought there was a big difference between tangible and intangible, which sounds like a difference between your clothing, your pets, and so on the one hand, and your money on the other, whether the money is in a bank account or in your piggy bank.
We don't believe that cash fits within those two definitions, concretely one way or the other. Cash is physically tangible. There are those who recognize it for what it is. You can go and someone wants to be paid cash on the barrelhead. They don't want to be paid with a credit card because there's a fee assessed when they use a credit card, and they accept it as a business. There are people who won't accept checks. They're out of state because they may not clear. They may be bad checks. So cash does have a different characteristic, a different quality to it than a bank account would, than a stock would. The other thing is, the example, even in the statute itself, they use chose as an action as their example of an intangible.
Some people won't accept cash for certain transactions.
I know the trustee makes mention that you can't mail it to pay a bill, and that's true, but I don't think it's because they won't accept the cash. It's that because cash can be stolen while it's in transit.
Well, okay, there are these different media of exchange, and they have different characteristics, but it doesn't seem to have anything to do with what the statute is getting at.
Well, I think the statute isn't clear, and because it isn't clear, it needs to be interpreted. And the Indiana Supreme Court and this court in Ray Fogle have said it should be interpreted liberally to allow...
Why did it say literally?
No, liberally.
Mm-hmm.
Liberally, to be, because it's special legislation, it's due for liberal construction for the benefit of the debtor for whom it was passed. And we believe liberal construction would support saying cash is within the tangible category, allowing a debtor to claim up to $4,000.
I could say it's extremely illiberal to allow only $100?
Well, I would say it would be very strict to say you're only allowed $100 cash in your wallet and or money in the bank. What I'm saying is the Pomeroy case and Imre Fogle said that there should be liberal construction of these statutes when they're ambiguous.
That is when.
And that should be the guiding principles for this court, and Judge Lozano should be upheld for that reason.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Gately.
Thank
you. Mr. Freeland, 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple points that I would like to make. One, that these exemption statutes are exemption statutes that apply to any claim in the state of Indiana. Any judgment creditor or any judgment debtor has the right to claim these same exemptions. These exemptions are not legislatively adopted for bankruptcy purposes, so that an Indiana judgment creditor would be able to attach a bank account except for $100. Be able to garnish wages except for 25% of the disposable income, etc. And cash would be subject to the $100, and they would be able to collect that. The mere fact that cash is not easily replaceable, like a check would be, does not make it tangible. And the Indiana courts have decided that a lottery ticket, and this is in Mauer versus Indiana Department of Revenue, 607 Northeast 2nd, 985, which is in Judge Lindquist's decision. A lottery ticket, by that decision, is intangible. We all know that if a lottery ticket is lost before it is redeemed, that there is big trouble. It can't be replaced. And the court said, the Supreme Court said, that all this does is represent the right to be able to make a claim against the lottery. So the mere fact that something is not easy to replace, such as cash or a lottery ticket complaint, in contrast to a check that may be a loss in the mail, doesn't change the nature of it. It is still intangible. Cash is an intangible promissory note unless there is some separate value, such as numeristic value, such as the signature of George Washington or the bull. It is an intangible by definition. And based upon that, Your Honors, I would respectfully request that Judge Lozano be reversed and that Judge Lindquist's decision be reinstated.
Okay, thank you very much, both parties. Next case.